Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to Neil Ward-Dutton, VP of Automation Analytics and AI at IDC Europe. We will be talking about automation as a strategy for your business. Welcome to the podcast, Neil.
It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
You recently gave a presentation titled Embracing Automation Strategy, the Who, How and Why at a Jitterbit event. It identified what businesses need to know in the age of automation. The IDC 2022 Worldwide CEO Survey found that automation is in the top five priorities for business leaders. Yet over the last few years, people have spoken and written about it using terms such as RPA and hyperautomation. What should automation mean to business leaders today?
Well, it's a great question. There's a number of ways of answering this, Steve. I'll try to talk about it in two different aspects. One is by thinking about the technology bits and pieces that people should think about when they think about automation. The second is really thinking about it in terms of outcomes. Let's start by talking a little bit about the technology. As you said rightly, over the last 5 years or so, there's been an awful lot of writing and speaking about technologies like RPA, intelligent automation, and so on. And those things haven't gone away. Absolutely haven't gone away. We know that over half of organizations across Europe now are actively using a variety of automation technologies. That's really behind the whole idea of the talk I gave, which is about being intentional when it comes to automation, because we see commonly organizations using two, three, four, five different technologies. They might use a bit of RPA for task automation. They might use a workflow platform or a low-code app development platform. They might be using some chatbot or virtual agent technology. They might be using some application integration technology. Very often, those things are all in the mix. When we talk about automation, particularly when we talk about embracing automation as a strategy, it's about really being super intentional about what are the roles that each of these technologies plays? How does it add value? How can they be used together to support particular kinds of use case? Because in many cases, these things are actually complementary. RPA and orchestration technology, for example, are highly, highly complementary. Equally, when organizations use process mining, which is another increasingly common thing for people to do, that is also very complementary to something like RPA or workflow automation. First answer is really about seeing that there's multiple technologies in play and organizations have to develop a view of how they fit together and add value to each other. If it's okay, I was going to talk briefly about value. Your question was really, really nicely put. What should it mean to business leaders? The key message to get across is that although most organizations start out on an automation journey thinking that they're going to go after efficiency, they're going to reduce the time or the effort it takes to get a certain amount of things done, what we know from our research is that that's not where they end up. Yes, they get efficiency gains, but they also very often get other gains too, around driving faster time to market, so driving innovation, driving better customer experience and higher customer satisfaction, reducing risk in the enterprise. And so what should automation mean to business leaders today? The key thing to get across is don't just think about this as a way to increase efficiency. There's actually lots of different ways we can get to value here.
You say there's two pillars, which are tech and outcomes. But what about the people and the change management around that? Because technology needs people to implement and then people to use it to get to those outcomes. So where do people fit in and how important are they to this whole process?
Absolutely vital. I've been studying and advising on process management, change management technologies for probably over a decade now. And you're absolutely right. Without considering the people, you are doomed to fail unless you're doing something extraordinarily niche and specific to one particular technical function, maybe in your business. In almost all cases, implementing automation is change management work, and people have to be part of the process right from the very beginning. And the key thing that's really driving interesting developments and improvements in this area is the introduction of what many people would call low-code or no-code tools. Almost every technology company has some kind of story around these tools. What I find interesting is that very often it's pitched as a way to get non-specialist, non-technical people involved in developing some kind of solution. But actually, there's a really, really profound benefit that you get, which isn't necessarily to do with just throwing things over the wall to a bunch of business people to build something. It really stems from the observation that if you want people to change, or if you want to give yourselves the best possible chance that people will accept a change, you involve them in the change right from the very beginning. You don't just say, hey, here's a new system, now live with it. What you do is you start off by saying, current environment we've got is not really working well for our business. Help us figure out how we can improve this environment so we can all enjoy our jobs more, be more productive, do a better job for the customer. One of the really, really cool things you get when you employ these low and no-code tools properly is they allow you to bring the end users into the process of change much earlier. They allow it to be possible to do co-creation. That really, really makes a big difference to change outcomes.
I'd probably take that a step further, and I'd say it's about letting people own their own change. I've seen that done successfully in various use cases around the world. Going back to the high-level point, though, why is automation a strategic initiative for business leaders? Or why should it be a strategic initiative?
It comes down to the fact that, as I said a minute ago, many organizations start off their journey looking at efficiency. How can automation drive their operations to do more with less? That in itself is right now a strategic initiative, becoming more efficient. If you look at the way the macroeconomic climate is developing, look at inflation, look at supply chain disruptions that are happening everywhere, look at tightening of the funding environment in sectors which are traditionally funded through venture funding or equity, there's a real squeeze. And so almost every company is looking at ways to become more efficient. That is often starting organizations out on this path. But what's also really, really important, even when organizations have a slightly wider aperture of their thinking, and they're thinking maybe they're seeing that this is an opportunity, that the current challenges we have in industry are an opportunity to leapfrog the competition, maybe doing a better job for customers. What we so often find, Steve, is that they do a really good job at, let's say, the front end of the organization. They might be offering some digital services, multi-channel contact, so they might have a really nice way of engaging customers and delivering them great services. But what we typically find when we dig into all the stuff that sits behind that, all of the business operations that deal with customer onboarding, billing, handling complaints, procurement, all the things that really make everything work behind the scenes, very often those things are still held together with string and sticky tape. Even in very large banks, which spend hundreds of millions every year on technology, you look inside a lot of their business operations and it's spreadsheets over email. The automation opportunity is absolutely critical to grasp.
How would you differentiate between an efficiency strategy and an automation strategy? Because what you've said could apply to a strategy to increase efficiency. Automation seems potentially much more than that.
Great question to ask, because very often people do get them mixed up. Just as you were saying that, I was thinking, yeah, it's a fair point, because actually, if you're just pursuing efficiency in your business operations, something that many organizations, particularly big multinational organizations, have done in the past, is they said, let's offshore it. Let's send it somewhere where we can get a contract that says that our provider will deliver it 15% cheaper. And that's a legitimate thing to do. Many, many, many organizations have done that. So why is automation better stroke different? Well, that's probably a whole podcast in itself, to be honest. But if I could just try and tackle one of the key things here, it really comes down to what automation technology really represents. This is really best framed, I think, in the context of what some listeners may roll their eyes when they hear me say digital transformation. So I fully accept when we talk about digital transformation, it's something people have talked about for a long time. If you just bear with me for one moment, what's really critical here, people can get fixated on, oh, okay, digital transformation means cloud, or it means mobile, or it means chatbots, or whatever. I always argue very strongly against that point of view. Fundamentally, it's not about getting to a particular destination. At its heart, that whole idea is about creating digital feedback loops of insight and action in your business. When you digitize something, whether it's an aspect of a product or a service or a customer experience, or, importantly, business process or a set of decisions, and that's where automation comes in. Automation tech is about digitizing aspects of work and decision-making. When you do that, you don't just digitize the actions that people normally take manually. you also create things that are themselves kind of transparent. You create platforms that can be looked inside. So once you've digitized a process or a flow of information or knowledge or value, you can look inside that and you can see what's working, what's not working, what people like, what they don't like, how you can make it better. And if you employ technology intelligently, automation is fundamentally about creating these closed loops of insight and action inside your business, which is extraordinarily powerful. And that's really the key reason why this is different from just doing something like offshoring or giving somebody else your mess and asking them to deliver it for less. Automation doesn't just help you improve the outcomes around the work by maybe automating aspects of it. It also enables that work to then be completely transparent. So you can deliver better service to your customers. You can massively improve the way you deal with compliance, for example. You can become smarter about new opportunities. You can be more agile because you can see inside the work.
What are the opportunities that automation can deliver to businesses and business leaders?
The answer to that is as varied as what organizations do. It's fair to say, though, that many, many organizations start out on their journey with automation, just looking through the lens of efficiency. What we do see, though, is that there are organizations that do much more than that, as I said earlier. They decrease their time to market in understanding new opportunities to create new products, new services, new types of customer experience, entering new markets, creating new customer interaction channels, by digitizing a lot of the work that's required to get into those kinds of opportunities. You make it much easier to not only move quicker, but to do so in a very data-driven way. You often hear digital natives and startups talking about failing fast and lean experimentation and so on. If I go back to the point I just made about closed loops of digital insight and action, unless you actually have that insight, then you are essentially just wetting your finger and sticking it in the air and trying to sense which way the wind's blowing. So automation is, if you apply some imagination to it, it's a way to get much smarter in terms of the way you make sense of the environment around your business and the way you take action to look at more strategic opportunities. I'm not going to give you a concrete example and say, well, automation can help every organization enter a new market, because that's not necessarily how it works. But whatever is important for an organization, if it employs automation strategically, it massively up-levels the capability in terms of sense-making in the environment, directing resources to focus on new opportunities, driving innovation programs, those kinds of things.
And what does an automation strategy look like, Neil?
Well, an automation strategy, it looks like a number of things. In some senses, an automation strategy has the same kind of components as any kind of strategy. When you think about what's important in any kind of strategy, it's not just a statement of intent. It's not just a goal. It's about making a clear statement about what you want to try and do, what you're not going to do. That's almost as important as what you are planning to do. A strategy might be around some very specific kinds of business outcomes, and then specific kinds of actions and levers that are going to be pulled and taken to drive towards those outcomes, and the things that are going to be avoided. We want to use automation to deliver higher quality experiences for our customers, to massively streamline the way we onboard and manage experiences for our customers through their whole journeys. What we are not going to use automation for is essentially automating all of the important customer touch points, because for our brand, it's really, really important that we create a consistently excellent customer experience, and we need people and personal touch to be a key part of how we do that. That kind of approach to strategy says, okay, how are we going to look to try and drive value from automation? But how does that really fit into our broader goals, values, vision, mission, all of that? An automation strategy has to be hooked into those things, because it can't just be about applying technology in isolation almost at random. We need a clear direction, and we need clear guardrails that are fundamentally grounded in the values and the broad approach of the company. Then what we need for an automation strategy is we need a clear view of the kinds of technologies we want to employ, how we're going to employ them in terms of, are we going to essentially going to build it ourselves? Are we going to work with some strategic partners? Is our strategy on the supplier side, is it to have one big provider who's going to help us with everything? Or is it about working with best of breed innovators or What does that look like? It may be a mix. There may be one default provider, but if that provider doesn't do everything, well, maybe we'll select one or two innovators to work around the side. It also involves thinking about the operating model. Are we going to drive this strategy from some kind of central group? Many organizations, in fact, would deploy what's called a center of excellence to try and create that momentum and make sure that things are consistent. But are we going to do all the work centrally? Are we going to federate it out towards different aspects of the business? These are the kinds of things that commonly come up in strategy. These factors all play a role also in automation.
You mentioned that automation is founded on technology, but who should build the strategic case for automation and who should then own it?
It's another great question, Steve. For example, what we know from the research we do at IDC, one of the things that really stands out most strongly is just how strongly the sands have shifted in terms of who now drives technology investments. At least across Europe, over 50% of IT investment budgets come from outside the IT department. CIOs and their direct reports have, on average, a little bit less than half of the budget available to make IT investments. When you're talking about a strategic automation investment, ultimately, the ownership of that is not going to be in any one specific place. But it's not feasible to get there from, let's say, the ground floor. Of course, what I would never advise is that you go from having no automation competence or experience to just creating a strategy and trying to make the whole leap in one go. Every successful organization I've come across has taken it in a stepwise fashion. So start out typically finding a sponsor in the business, in a particular business function. Might be customer support, might be finance, might be procurement, HR. Those are the kind of places they typically start. You find a sponsor in a particular business function, and then typically there'll be some representation from IT working alongside the leaders in that business function to figure out, okay, what does the case look like? How do we tackle maybe a handful of small but impactful projects in this area so we can demonstrate value and we can make a material difference to how business in this particular part of the company operates? Then what we do is, as we start to get experience, build momentum, show the value of what we're doing, what tends to happen quite quickly to become successful is that you get to the point where the team running this starts to get a bit panicky because they get a lot of demand from elsewhere in the business and they can't deal with that. It's too much. So that's typically the point where a center of excellence gets involved or gets built to try and coordinate work, to try and make sure that best practices get followed, that skills are shared throughout the organization. At that point, what we also tend to then see is there needs to be a coordination effort in senior leadership, because it's not enough to just say, okay, Center of Excellence works with the head of finance, and then separately they work with the head of customer service, and separately they work with head of marketing, and so on and so on. There needs to be coordination at that level too. We need to start getting clear, consistent agreement between all of those senior business leaders in terms of how they're going to work together to ensure that resources are deployed in the best possible way. So that very quickly, if you're really talking about strategic automation, that becomes something that is board level issue. That's almost a defining characteristic of, is this strategic automation or isn't it? If it is, then it's being discussed at board level. If it's not being discussed at board level, then it's probably not really a strategic automation.
Talking about technology, is there a case whereby different functions may adopt different pieces of technology to achieve their automation goals? Do you then have siloed solutions? Or is there a point where you need to make sure there is a strategic view on technology?
The short answer, Steve, is yes, but there's, of course, a detail behind that. I was really interested to hear you say, is it the case that organizations may end up using multiple different technologies, tools to solve the same problems? In fact, the answer is yes, they very often do. It's really very, very common for that to happen. In almost every organization that I've seen implement automation across more than one or two business functions, they very often find that they've been using, let's say, two or three RPA vendors. They might be using two or three different workflow automation tools. They might be using even two or three application integration platforms. That's really not uncommon at all. I think it's important to say that it's not necessarily the case that that has to be stamped out. There may be very, very good reasons why different teams have gone down certain paths. what I'm not advocating is that there is a point at which every organization must completely stamp out any divergence and must impose strict standards with an iron fist. I think that's not at all practical, and it's not actually particularly sensible from a business point of view often, because there are very, very often very clear reasons why some bits of an organization have gone down one path and others have gone down another path. However, what is really critical is that, again, coming back to the point I made earlier, the organizations are really intentional about this. So if we get to the point where there is really a consideration that this should be a strategic initiative, we start to have business leaders talking to each other to coordinate their actions, we start to have a center of excellence that really is leveraged widely, that team needs to be working through the organization to say, okay, what are you using? Why are you using it that way? Why are you using that particular vendor? Did you know that we use another vendor in another place? Is there a reason why we're using two different vendors for this? And they start to work through that problem because, well, I shouldn't even say problem. They start to work through that landscape because it's not necessarily a problem, but it's important to always ask the question, because what we find is that when organizations don't really grasp the nettle on this, they do open themselves up to more risk by just not really having a clear picture of why they're doing things a certain way.
What are the challenges you've seen companies face delivering on automation?
Wow, where to start? I suppose the most common challenges, the kind of symptoms that pop up, are people just chasing a tool because they think it looks good, or they've bought into it without really thinking about what it's good for. That typically comes out as organizations really abusing tools, really torturing them to try and get them to do things they're not particularly good at. That's one. Another challenge that organizations typically come across is that they essentially get kind of locked in a box where this can at first seem like success, but actually ends up as a real challenge. Organizations where they start out on that road to efficiency, and there's maybe a center of excellence that gets very good at doing that. I know quite a few organizations where the people in the center of excellence will complain that people only ever talk to them when they want to try and save money. And those people in the center of excellence know that automation can be used to deliver much more than efficiency, but nobody ever asks them about it. That's another thing that happens quite often.
How can they overcome that?
Really, there's no magic bullet to solving that problem, Steve. It's really about educating organizations about the different kinds of metrics and measurements they can use and the different kinds of metrics and measurements they can move the needle on with automation. So it's about educating stakeholders in the business through particular kinds of use cases, how automation can drive different kinds of outcomes. There's different kinds of things organizations can do. If they have a center of excellence already, they can use a bit of time from that center of excellence to create demos or pilots to show how automation could improve customer satisfaction, for example. Or there's all kinds of things that can be done there.
We hear a lot about shortage of talent around technology. Is there a shortage of talent? What kind of people do organizations need to either hire or train internally or find internally to deliver on an automation strategy?
So the question of skills is a super interesting one. When we run surveys and ask people, what are the things that hold them back from going further or faster with automation? Pretty much always number one or number two is access to skills. When you really dig into it, though, when you ask organizations that are already significantly into their journey with automation, they typically see it a different way. Let me unpack that a bit. The first thing to say is that everywhere apart from big homogeneous markets like the US, one of the challenges that exists is that the ecosystem for partners, consulting, system integrator type partners who know about all this stuff, this automation and integration technology, the ecosystem is very fragmented. You tend to have a handful of really big companies like Accenture, Capgemini, Deloitte, EY, those kinds of people. But they tend to be really expensive. They tend to only want to work on big projects. If you don't have the luxury of being very rich and very big, you probably have to look elsewhere. And often then, the partners you have to turn to, it's a very fragmented landscape. It does create a challenge because for many of the tools out there, the partner ecosystems are not huge. And so the access to talent can be a problem. However, when we talk to organizations who are, as I say, sort of significantly far along with their automation journey, what they realize is that they don't actually have to have a lot of technical specialists in the mix in order to be able to succeed. typically speaking, we see even really quite large organizations that are delivering maybe dozens of projects. They might have a core center of excellence where they are doing things like running the platform, managing support questions, helping to train people, helping to test and verify things before they go live, all of those kinds of good things. They may have 3, 4, 5 people in that center of excellence. That's not uncommon. That could serve a really quite significantly sized multinational. And then what you tend to find is then on the individual projects, a lot of the work is actually done by what in the old days we would have called business analysts. Yes, people who have some analytical skills, they understand tech at a high level, they can specify requirements, they can carry out high-level design work. Very often, a lot of the work within an individual project can be driven by people like that. And the core, really tech-savvy people who understand the ins and outs of the platforms, they can actually be quite a modestly sized team. Just to wrap that all up, it's a really interesting conundrum because you tend to find that organizations that are starting out fundamentally are worried that there aren't enough skills for them to get started. But when organizations are significantly far along, they realize that, generally speaking, it's not really the barrier they think it is.
Is there a roadmap that companies can follow to deliver success against an automation strategy?
Absolutely, there's a roadmap to success. It's not something I could really describe on a podcast super well, but the key ingredients, let's say, that you need to have in place in order to drive a real roadmap for success are a clear understanding of automation technologies you want to try and use, the kinds of use cases you want to try and go after, the business value you think you can achieve or you want to explore within those use cases, and then the resources you're going to need to actually execute on those use cases. And what we always say to people is prioritize and then build a timeline for those use cases. So let's say, for example, in your initial exploration work, you identify 20 use cases. Well, make that a phased roadmap. Look at 3 to start with, then maybe another 5, another 5, another 5, and then another 2. So start with a small handful of use cases where you can clearly articulate what the business value that you care about is. So, for example, is it about improving efficiency? How much would you like to try and improve efficiency? Is it about customer experience, an NPS that you might use to measure customer satisfaction? Is it about time to market? Okay, well, how do we measure that? What kind of improvement do we think we want? As you start to do that, you can identify what kind of resources do we need? Which business stakeholders do we need to bring into the picture? By creating a roadmap around that phased approach where you think about metrics, stakeholders, use cases, and then technology resources and skills underpinning that, that's the way, stepwise, you build a path to success.
What's the first step business leaders should take on that journey?
What's the first step to take? Well, we already know, Steve, that the majority of organizations, certainly organizations with more than 500 employees, the majority of organizations already have some kind of automation technology in play. If any organization is thinking, okay, we need to take a more strategic approach to how we do automation, the first step is to figure out what on earth you're doing at the moment, because chances are there's pockets of automation happening that you don't know about. So the first step is to just get a team in place with representation from IT, from different business functions, to actually do a, could call it an audit, or to go out and look and see what kinds of technologies people are using, in which places, and what kind of value they're deriving. That's when you can start from a solid foundation.
Neil, thank you very much. It's been very enlightening.
Thanks very much, Steve.